Redbird Sports Talk. Interviews and professional sports news all in one place.
Redbird's playing a lot on the outside. Open three for Poindexter. Got it.
The quarterback just couldn't figure out the passing game.
You're listening to Red Zone, only on 103.3 WZND. Blasting off in
Thursday, Birds, and welcome to another edition of the Red Zone. And we're back, everybody. It feels so good to be back after a month-long hiatus of the Red Zone. We're finally back with you with all Illinois State coverage, national sports coverage from 6 to 7 every Thursday for the rest of the semester. Ben Hootie, Julian Voss, Joey LeMaster back after a long extended break. Fellas, it feels so good to be back, especially with you two.
Oh, I appreciate that, Ben. Well, like, it's been somewhat a longer week, and I'm like, oh, man, what's really going to help me get back in? And then we walked in the studio, and I was like, oh, yeah, this is why I enjoy being here. I'm excited to talk sports and be back with the crew.
Yeah, I mean, there's been a lot that's been going on since we've been gone. Yeah, since, like, the first day we've been gone, there's been a lot going on. I know you two are happy about one thing we're going to talk about, so it's going to be a long episode for me.
It's going to be. There's been a lot that happened. We're going to cover a ton in this show. We're going to start off, obviously, with the Illinois State Redbirds, and we'll get to them. But, you know, there's just been so much news, I would say, especially in the Midwest and really, like, in the Chicago sports. So later in the show, we'll talk about that. And, of course, the NFL playoffs are well underway. I would say kind of a little bit of a disappointing wild card weekend for the most part. But I think it's setting up for a great divisional round of the playoffs. So we're super excited to bring you that all show long. And I hope you guys had happy holidays as well. I hope it went perfectly, right?
It was a great holidays, but I need to know, what was the best thing you guys got for Christmas?
Okay, I love this.
That's a tough question. I got mostly just, like, clothes and stuff. I'd say a lot of the hoodies I got were really nice.
Would you say you had that stuff on, Julian?
Always. Always.
I got a new driver for Christmas.
Really?
So that's just like nice. King Cobra driver. It's like I've never had a driver before. I just started golfing this summer, and I was just like, I have to finally get a driver. Like, I was using my buddy's drivers all summer long, and I'm just like, it's just not, I need to have my own. Like, it feels weird using another man's driver. Finally got my own, got a cool Ninja Turtle head cover for it. It's awesome.
Is that why you tagged me in the Notre Dame giveaway?
Yeah. The other day, there was, like, a giveaway on Instagram for head covers for Notre Dame, like, covered things, and I was like, all right, got to tag three Notre Dame fans. Obviously, I had to tag Joey LeMaster to my right. We'll talk more about Notre Dame later on in the show. We're going to start off with the Redbirds. Oh, wait, what was your favorite gift? I never got to that.
So I'm a big guy of throwback NFL jerseys, and I got a Lawrence Taylor jersey for Christmas.
That was awesome. Was that the only one you got?
Like, yeah, that was the only throwback I got. I kind of get one every year. It's kind of the tradition with me and my grandma.
Okay, yeah, I love that. That's what I used to do, like, growing up. Like, it was always, like, jersey every year. Like,
I got Dan
nice
Marino last year.
Yeah,
too,
I remember seeing that.
Shout out Grandma Rita. You're the GOAT.
They're awesome. That is awesome. All right, let's talk Redbirds now as we are going to get into this basketball team. And it doesn't feel like, since the last time we've talked, that a whole lot has happened in the last month. They're currently in the midst of a three-game losing streak. They're on a nice little two-game losing streak there, winning streak there at the beginning of January when they beat Murray State in Southern Illinois. But they've really just kind of stayed afloat at this point. But there was a point where it felt like vibes were super high, and now that they've gotten into Valley play, it just feels like they're starting to sink a little bit.
Yeah, so normally the biggest battle is supposed to happen on the court, but the biggest issue for Illinois State has been the battles off the court. They've just been decimated by the flu. Like, they try and run a deeper rotation. They've been running 7-8-man rotations just because, like, they're so exhausted. And you look at these close games against Northern Iowa and Drake, they were in an absolute shootout with the Panthers, which ended on a game-winning buzzer beater from the Panthers. It's like, this team is just fighting the flu, but if you watch this team, like, it's kind of hard to stay positive. There's just so much strength. Like, Chase Walker is making a case to be the best player in the Valley. I don't think he'll get it over Sturts of Drake, but he's putting the Valley to be first team. Ken Ziegler's has continued to be a first player guy. Jack Daugherty has been incredible off the bench. Like, you see, there is strengths here. It's just, you got to hope that it all comes around and it doesn't become another what-if season.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen the type of team this team can really be. They're good at shooting, but the problem has always been on the defensive side of the ball, and that's really what kills you at this point of the year, because you're about to enter a tournament play, maybe March Madness play, but if you don't have a defense around that time, you're not going to succeed at all, and especially not having a big man except for Chase Walker.
Yeah, Caden Bozer, he's able to stretch the floor, but doesn't play the big man defense. But I think we're not talking about the biggest weakness for Illinois State is they don't have a facilitator to save their life. Like, we kind of demoted Dalton Banks from that role and had Johnny Kinsey become our starting point guard. And he does a solid job, but you don't want your lead scoring guard to have to stop shooting the ball because you want him to be the playmaker. Like, the Phoenix Suns, they tried doing that for Devin Booker, and look how well that's gone for them. It has, and the Phoenix Suns are a disaster right now. It's just, it kind of feels like Illinois State's going to be going in that direction if they don't don't get someone else to emerge as a lead facilitator.
It's really interesting seeing these rotations, and I bet, Joey, you can dive more in on it. Kind of like some people that I feel like we were seeing more towards the beginning of the year, like Dalton Banks. He's still getting a lot of minutes out there, but obviously demoted from the starting lineup. And then I would say another player that, like, got a lot of run at the beginning of the year, and I've seen a lot of people complain about it, is the fact that it feels like Ty Pence has kind of been put on the backseat a little bit. He's still starting, but a lot less minutes, right?
Yeah, a lot less minutes, and they're not really letting him attempt to score as much. Like, he's kind of just more been like, I don't want to say a Josh Hart type of player, but it's kind of more like, oh, play some defense, try and get some rebounds, and get an occasional drive at the basket. Like, we saw Ty Pence emerge as a guy that could score at the start of the year. He was scoring at all three levels in the paint, the mid-range, the three-point line, just looked like a completely new player from last year. And I don't want to say it's like it's a lack of confidence. It's just they kind of want him to play a little bit of a different role, and that's just kind of a bummer for how hot he started off the season.
Yeah, looking at the stats, you can just see that this team really could put as many points up as their opponents because they just played Drake and only lost by 4 points. Like, this team's potential is through the roof, but like you said, all the off-court stuff, all the other stuff really does affect the team in the long run.
Yeah, and Drake's 14-2. They start off the season like 12-0, and they just beat Bradley as well. Drake's an incredible team, so the fact that we're hanging with them, running an 8-man rotation, especially with the defense Drake plays, oh my god, like, I'm so happy that, like, I sit here and don't have to play on the court, because Drake just plays the most exhausting defense, and they just force turnovers and tire you out. So the fact the Redbirds were able to do that with a depleted rotation, I think is a big compliment for them, but you can't really just put asterisks against his losses. It doesn't really matter when it comes to the seeding in the Valley Tournament, so the Redbirds got to try and turn it around as quickly as possible.
Over break, you went to a Drake-Bradley game, which I think a lot of people are considering as the two favorites of the Valley right now. And it was funny because you thought, it felt like everyone was like, Drake's going to take a step back. No, it's the same old Drake. They just find ways to win no matter what. What was that game like? Like, what did you see there between really those two teams? And what do you think that differentiates them between an Illinois State team that has just struggled so far earlier this season?
All right, so I'm going to compliment Drake. I think Bradley's a great team. Their offense is incredible. They just scored 118 points yesterday, which is ridiculous at the collegiate level. But Drake just runs a defense where they don't let you shoot the three-point ball, and they hustle for everything. They're diving for the ball. They're getting offensive and defensive rebounds. They're just a fundamentally sound team. And just normally when you're pulling players from the D2 level, like, majority of Drake's roster is the D2 coach and their D2 players. And the only way that's going to work at the D1 level is if there's a certain system or philosophy that they follow. And that's what the Drake Bulldogs have done so well, is they just don't make mistakes. Like, Bradley is very good at not turning over the ball. Bradley turned the ball over, I want to say, 17 or 18 times, which is just so uncharacteristic for them. And that's just a compliment for how well Drake plays on the defensive side of the ball. And that's going to cause everybody problems.
Yeah, it seems like they play more of like a grit and grind type of, you know, like Memphis Grizzlies type of basketball.
Oh man, that's,
like,
my favorite team ever.
Those are like the type of teams you love to watch because they care about both sides of the ball. And this is a time in basketball a lot of people complain about too many threes, not enough defense, and things like that. So it's refreshing to see a team like this play.
Yeah, I want to bounce off that point from Julian because it could have been more spot on. Like, yeah, Northern Iowa and Drake were depleted, but you look at that Evansville game. We still had a lot of our guys. And Evansville, simply put, they wanted to win more than we did. Like, they were forcing the turnovers. They were getting offensive rebounds. And normally, like, I want to say in the Power 5 level of college basketball, it comes more down to skill. But, like, when you're in these mid-majors, it just comes down to these gritty teams that want it more. So if Illinois State wants to come around and be the level of this Drake Bulldogs or the Bradley Braves, they got to want it. Simple as that.
One of the big things that I've been looking at across this break and just kept following is net rankings. So obviously, when we get to tournament time, I think net is one of the biggest stats that the people that the committee choose to get in the tournament is those net rankings. And I mean, Illinois State is 116th, and Drake and Bradley 67 and 75 respectively. But then there's three other Valley teams in like this chunk with Illinois State, and the rest of the Valley is just in the mid 200, like 200s, even Evansville, who's at 291 right now in net ranking nationally. It just feels like what's the problem right now? What's going wrong? Why? And what can they fix?
I think what went wrong was our expectations. I mean, so many players left the Valley last year. I was like, oh, the Valley's gonna be trash this year. Like, anybody can win it. The Valley's so good. They're one of the best mid majors in the country. So I think that's probably an issue, and I'm not going to blame it on me being Italian or anything, but, like, I just get a little bit of confidence with this. Like, oh, this conference is worse. Illinois State's going to make a statement when, realistically, we didn't take as much of a leap as I thought we would. But really, it's just Illinois State, they have strengths these other teams don't have. They have a 1-2 tandem, which you make an argument could be the best in the Valley. The duo of Chase Walker and Johnny Kinziger is immaculate. It's just there's these small things they have to figure out with the rotation and getting a facilitator, and they need more hustlers like Jordan Davis because his emergence has been incredible and has saved the Redbirds in some games.
Yeah, I think you kind of pointed out the two biggest things you need on a basketball team, and that's the facilitator, the person playmaking everything, and then you also need a guy on the inside that's going to be protecting the rim as much as possible. And I feel like Chase Walker is pretty good at both a little bit of that, but you don't really have a dude over 6'11" that really protects the rim like that. So if they brought in like a guy from the portal that was more of a playmaker like that, I think next year could be a really good year for them.
Yeah, and that's why when you just go back to the Drake Bulldogs, look at Bennett Sturts, who is more than likely going to be the Missouri Valley Conference Player of the Year. I've even seen people give him nominations for All-Americans, which is just nuts coming from the Valley. But he's just a guy that knows how to facilitate the ball. And when you have all these D2 guys, if you don't have someone that can facilitate and read that and lead that system, it's not going to work out. And it's just, if you're like the Illinois State Redbirds, you're like kicking yourself for not getting a guy like that in the portal, because this was a D2 guy, and suddenly he's just playing Division I for the first time. He's getting All-American shouts, so that's really the big thing the Redbirds are going to have to try and figure out, and that's a very difficult challenge to figure out in the middle of the season.
Joey, I'd love to ask you about this. You mentioned his name when we were talking about Chase Walker and Johnny Kinziger, and you mentioned Jordan Davis. Now, you had the privilege to talk to him, 2 weeks ago now, this past week, and that's a player that I think, when he came in last year, had extremely high expectations. You know, brother of a once great player at Wisconsin. He himself was at Wisconsin. And I think his first season, it felt like it fell a little flat. We started to see him get more in the rotation this year, to the point of now where he's getting in the starting lineup, getting a ton of minutes. And, I mean, defensively, and I know you always mention him on the offensive boards as well, he's been one of the better players for the Redbirds. Tell us a little bit more about like how he talked about his development and everything like that.
I mean, he just had a complete basketball identity change. It's been so crucial for the Redbirds, because coming into college, he was supposed to be like his brother, where he's going to get up buckets and be a star. And that didn't really work out at the Big Ten level. So then when you think you're going down to quote-unquote easier competition, it's like, oh, I got this Big Ten experience. I was a 3-star recruit. I'm going to get buckets in the Valley. But then he didn't. He was struggling to score as well. His shooting numbers were actually worse than they were at Wisconsin. And then this offseason, he had an identity change. He said people were making fun of his motor. And he's like, you know what? I'm going to prove these people wrong. And then he said he wanted to make his game a lot similar to Josh Hart of the New York Knicks, and they play identically the same. Is he gets these offensive rebounds, he clamps up on defense. When someone gets a defensive rebound, he literally tips it out of their hands, and that's just another free possession for the Redbirds. It's just a complete identity change has made Jordan Davis a much better player. Like, I'm going to be very real with our listeners. I despised Jordan Davis last year. I'm just going to be completely honest. I was like, man, his game just doesn't translate. Honestly, I was a 3-star prospect, but with this mentality change, the new player he is, like, yeah, this is what the potential they saw, and just, he's looked incredible, and I'm really happy for his turnaround.
And he's beaming with confidence, too, like,
oh, absolutely,
when you talk to him. And that's the good thing. Like, that's the biggest thing about being a basketball player. You want to have confidence. It felt like it just wasn't there that last year. Mm. And clearly this year, whether he just got more comfortable here at Illinois State or with the coaching staff. I mean, it's clearly showing. I mean, I think it was 2 days ago, is his highest scoring game ever as a Redbird with 16 points.
Yeah, and people don't really realize how big mentality is when it comes to athletes. And Jordan Davis this is my key takeaway. This is such an awesome quote from Jordan Davis. Is like, when he's playing at Wisconsin, Illinois State, people would talk trash, like, you're not your brother, you're not your brother. And he said that used to get to him, but then he realized, yeah, you're right, I'm not my brother, I'm Jordan Davis, and that's who I need to be. I don't have to be like my brother. And I think that's helped completely change his identity, and now he's probably one of the biggest parts of this Illinois State philosophy.
That's incredible. I hope he continues to lead the Redbirds to success. Let's just look down the line a little bit before we wrap up and go to break. What is our outlook of this team? Let's just say for the next three games. So you got Missouri State, Indiana State, and Bradley.
I mean, I think you at least win two of these next couple games. I got the call against Indiana State on Tuesday, and I feel like that's going to be the game where you could really make a good standout to your home crowd. Missouri State's going to be a little bit of a tougher game, but I think that'll probably be more of a win, too. So I'm saying 2-0 on that. But Bradley, that's just going to be too tough of a game for him to win.
Yeah, I'm going to disagree. So first off, I'm on the Missouri State game with Everton Levy, if you want to listen to
this
that
Saturday,
one.
3:50.
Yeah, make sure you tune in. But the Bradley game, like, I think it's winnable. Like, I know they looked incredible against Indiana State, where they scored 118. but they're able to get locked down and weak. We've seen the Redbirds throughout the season. They can get in shootouts. They scored 84 points, 85, 90. Getting, I'm pretty sure they cracked 100 at one point. Yeah, against Trinity Christian. Like, I think that game's going to be a shootout. We're not going to see much defense. So I'm not saying we're going to win that one because we haven't won it recently. But this is probably the closest it will have been in a while. And it's going to be on CBS. Look at the Redbirds.
That's exciting.
That's cool. Redbirds back in action this Saturday, January 18th, 3:50. Joey LeMaster, Everton Levy on the call. Make sure to tune into that one as they take on the Missouri State Bears. When we come back, we're going to talk some college football playoff as well as the upcoming national championship here on the Red Zone. WZND back here on the Red Zone. Ben Hootie, Joey LeMaster, and Julian Voss. And as I alluded to at the beginning of the show, going off the air for a month, a lot happens in sports. And honestly, if you're a college football fan, we probably went off the air probably the worst time you could have ever asked for, because we had the first ever 12-man college football playoff. And I would say that first round, nothing really surprising. Everyone kind of expected it to go that way. There was a lot of talk about, hey, maybe we should change things again. Of course, it's always going to be. It's politics in college football. Mm-hmm. The second round, I think everybody was pretty shocked with how, I mean, just the games went. It was mostly blowouts, and it was of all the lower-seeded teams. Then we get to the Final Four, Notre Dame, Penn State, Ohio State, and Texas, and it's setting up the stage for this Monday night. The Notre Dame Fighting Irish are in the national championship facing off against the Ohio State Buckeyes. Joey, me and you have been waiting a long time for this. I know this is mostly Illinois State Central, but as we've been talking about all year, we are Notre Dame football fans.
No, we're not.
And oh my goodness, I can't believe that they actually made it.
I wish you guys could see the smile on Julian Voss's face right now. He's been waiting all season for this moment. He's like, dude, I hate the Fighting Illini. I want to convert to Notre Dame. So the fact that he's been able to ride this Notre Dame experience with us has been truly revolutionary. Like, it's been awesome.
Before we get into Notre Dame and all national championship talk, I will give credit to the Fighting Illini because they gave us easily the best bowl game, by far. That was so much fun. I couldn't believe. And they ended up coming out on top in that one, too.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it was just, things are looking up for that program. Just like the Illinois State football program, I saw it was something.
Yeah,
that, too. And they posted a graphic about how, like, we were one of two teams in the state with 12-plus wins.
Wow.
Right? 12? No, U of I had 12 wins as well.
Yeah, we were tied for first.
So we both had 12 with U of I, so Illinois State we could go hand for hand.
I mean, if you look at U of I's roster, they have losing three or four guys, too. So
yeah,
team's going to be pretty good next season, too, but I think Luke Altmaier deserves way more credit than you're
going to get. Yeah, it's pretty cool that he's coming back.
Yes.
Like, that's awesome.
I don't care. Can we talk about Notre Dame?
Yeah,
I do not care at all. The Fighting Irish are in the national championship, ladies and gentlemen. We thought the drought was over. We thought it was just never going to happen again. I never thought I would witness this in my lifetime. But here we are, ladies and gentlemen. The stakes could not be higher. The pressure could not be here. Notre Dame not expected to get here. Should they even be in the playoffs? People said, like, they lost to the Huskies. They should not even get a nomination. Well, guess what, ladies and gentlemen? You were wrong. The Fighting Irish are here, and it's all due to the one and only Marcus Freeman.
You've been waiting to say that.
So long.
It's like you had that scripted. You were ready.
Yeah,
to
I had
say
a script
that.
In my head, and I really wanted to say Aura, but I was like, okay, we're pushing it a little
too hard. It was perfect. It was perfect.
I mean, legitimately.
I think we could go back to that U and I loss. Northern Illinois. I almost said Northern Iowa. I'm in basketball MVC mode right now. But Northern Illinois. And, you know, it's funny because if this team ends up winning the Natty, that's like the greatest upset of all time.
Mm-hmm,
but in all reality, I don't know if you guys would agree with me. I think Joey does, but if that Northern Illinois loss never happens, I don't think Notre Dame's at this point right now.
Mm-hmm.
And just from videos I've seen and the way the players talk, like, Coach Marcus Freeman definitely instilled in their head, like, that's not Notre Dame. Like, that's not Notre Dame football losing to Northern Illinois like that. Like, that's not Notre Dame football. And sure enough, they turned around and have just stomped on every single team that they have played up until Penn State, which I think gave us one of the most memorable college football playoff games since the inception of the college football playoff, and that's going back to the 14 playoff as well, not just this 12-man.
Yeah, and here's the big thing about the NIU losses. If that loss doesn't happen, Thomas Hamak does not tell Marcus Freeman how Notre Dame could be better and how they're able to be beaten. So that conversation was apparently the biggest thing that ever happened in Notre Dame football, and I couldn't be happier. But I want to talk to Julian, because Julian is our Big Ten expert up here. Can you compliment Ohio State for us, please?
Ohio State's going to whoop you guys.
Okay.
I'm sorry, but they're going to. But, no, I've liked Notre Dame a lot throughout the rest of the season. I mean, they've grown a lot. I think Marcus Freeman honestly really did install their Notre Dame culture now. Like, it seems like Jeremiah Love also is one of my favorite running backs to watch.
So it's good. Like the first time that, like, in a really long time that it feels like Notre Dame just has, like an alien on their side. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, you look at Ohio State and they have, like, aliens, six playmakers all over the field, and that's been the way that it's been with Ohio State for, I mean,
ever,
yeah. And with Jeremiah Love, and it's crazy, like, they're winning these games with him being limited in all of them. Like, ever since that 98-yard touchdown run he had against Indiana early on, he just hasn't been the same player. He's been injured, and they're still finding ways to win games, and, he's got to be one of the early favorites to win the Heisman next year.
That run I saw him have against Penn State is probably top five runs I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah, like, I'm going to be honest, like, not to get in a bear.
Touchdown. Yeah, oh, my God. It was beautiful.
If DeAndre Swift attempted to do that, it would probably have been the end of his career. He would never come again. So the thing Jeremiah Love can do at the collegiate level, like, I pray he's here next year, because Jeremiah Love is just incredible.
I think we're talking about the wrong Jeremiah, though, because Ohio State has one that's – you guys, is Ben Morrison's still out, right? He's not going to play.
Yeah, he's not going to play.
If they were playing, that'd be one of the top matchups, I think, ever in the college football national championship. But
I will say, though, and I hope I do want to talk a little bit about Ohio State, but Texas's game plan was take Jeremiah Smith out of the game.
Yeah,
and it worked. It worked beautifully. Like, Jeremiah Smith did not have that great of a game against Texas. Just a matter of the rest of Ohio State's playmakers got involved, obviously won them the game. First of all, that game against Texas was very losable. Like, they could have easily lost that game. Texas gave the game away, obviously. But I think the biggest thing is I trust Notre Dame's secondary a lot more than I trust Texas's. Mm-hmm. And I think that could be a big difference if their game plan is take Jeremiah Smith out of the game as much as you possibly can.
Yeah, I've had Ohio State winning it all since the beginning of the season, and I'm obviously going to stick through that throughout the rest of this, but it really does seem like it's going to be an offensive versus defensive type of game. Like,
yeah.
Your guys' defense is phenomenal, but I do think that Barron from Texas was a huge matchup against Jeremiah Smith, probably the best matchup he'll have. So this is going to be the game where I think he comes back, but you guys have to also take out the two running backs, Judkins and Henderson, I think.
Yeah, there's a lot to stop. It's just the Ohio State puzzle is so difficult to figure out, and I'm going to do something that's going to pain me. It's just I have to compliment Ryan Day. It really hurts me to do because Ryan Day is not one of my favorite coaches, to say it in a nice way. But it's just after the Michigan game, I was like, oh, yeah, this guy's done. He shouldn't even make it to the playoffs. And then he destroys Tennessee. He destroys Oregon. He wins a gritty game against Texas. And it's just, if they win a national championship, Ryan Day might be there for a long time.
And that's just, like, the weirdest part about this season, because in all reality, like, if Ohio State wins the national championship, which, granted, I think when we made our predictions at the beginning of the season, I also said Ohio State as well. Like, I was on that train. It's just such an odd season because they dominated every single facet of the game all season long, besides one game to their literal arch rival, the greatest rivalry in sports, who Ryan Day still has yet to beat Michigan. And, like, I think that still, like, holds leverage, potentially. And, you know, just bad clock management loses them a game to Oregon. So, I don't know. It's such a weird season, but they've just, I guess it's just kind of how the college, this 12-team playoff is going to work. Like, if you get into the playoffs hot, which Ohio State was not hot, they just lost to Michigan and lost their chance at playing in the Big Ten championship and potentially getting a bye. If anything, that Michigan loss is just like how the Northern Illinois loss is to Notre Dame, and it just turned them into a second gear, and this is the Ohio State that we were expecting to see all season long.
Yeah, I just really could not agree more. They're also just so talented on the defensive side of the ball. They've really looked like the best team in the country, which is something we had not said in a couple of weeks. But if anybody can figure out the puzzle, I know one man who can do it, and that's probably Marcus Freeman.
Yeah.
So I still have a lot of faith in the Irish, and I'm going to completely butcher the pronunciation of his name. I don't want to be like a fake Notre Dame fan. But where on the street is Charles Jagusa, the left tackle who got injured right away? He might be back playing his first game in the national championship. Wouldn't that be crazy?
That's crazy. It's nuts. I cannot believe that. Honestly, like, at this point, I've been, like, I'm happy enough. I want to win a national championship, obviously. But, like, that game against Penn State, and we could just talk about it a little bit, that took so many years off my life. And the craziest part is like, we know Penn State is like cynical chokers. Like, that's just what Penn State does. Mm-hmm. But in all reality, it's like the same way with Notre Dame. Like, it was who's gonna lose, like, who's gonna find a way to lose this game? That's really what it came down to in that Penn State Notre Dame game. I think they're both like, obviously, two top five teams in the country, but just the way that it's gone for them over like the last 10 years, even going back farther than that, those two legendary college football franchises, it was just like, how are they going to give this game away? I could not believe that Drew Aller threw that pick. It's like, what are you doing? What are you doing?
I've not seen someone kill their draft stock so quick in my life.
I know.
Saying, so bad.
He shouldn't go to Penn State next year. He might be QB1 on the board. It's like, oh, you might be a day four pick. Like, and that's not even a day.
I'm not going to lie. I'm excited for the uniform matchup. For the uniform matchup.
100%. I hope they both wear their homes. I think that they're different enough where the Notre Dame can wear their navy and Ohio State can wear their reds. Like,
white helmets, gold helmets.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's beautiful. Even the national championship, too. Like, I mean, like, Penn State, I know a lot of people like their helmets. I think they're kind of lame.
Yeah.
Like, but
no comment.
It is like a classic, like, look, like the blue, like they did it before anyone else. And Texas, obviously, like, horns down, but it was horns up. Like, it's a great look. I think before we go to break,
we gotta do predictions.
We'll do that one more time too. But I want to ask, how have we thought the 12-man first year of the 12-man? Do you think that there should be change? Do you think it's worked out well? What do you think are some things that maybe could be tweaked?
I wouldn't tweak anything, if I'm being honest. Like, you look at the NFL, and, like, their wild card games are, like, disasters. And, like, people are like, oh, we need to shorten the NFL playoffs, and we need a selection committee to make sure the Bengals get in because they were robbed. Like, nothing needs to be changed. I think they've done it great. The only thing maybe is you can change up seeding a little bit. Like, I'm not sure if Boise State and Arizona State should be top four teams. So maybe that could change, if anything. But if not, I think you can stick with the 12-team format.
Yeah, to me, this was kind of being like more like the practice year, what they're going to have, like a background of what the 12-man playoff was going to look like. And I think they did a good job with everything pretty much except for, like you said, the seeding. I think Boise State and Arizona State should not have had byes. And I think that's kind of messes up a team's like full on like standpoint. You see Oregon, they got killed against Ohio State. But I think you could also change up the teams that are also in it a little bit, because SMU, we all wanted them to be in there, but they shouldn't have been in there.
No.
And who would you put in over SMU?
Probably,
if you say Bama, we are not going to commercial break.
I was thinking like a team like A&M if they didn't mess up the end of their season.
And also like a Miami too. Like if Miami just didn't punt it away, like Miami against Penn State would have been a much better matchup than SMU. It's
who
just
doesn't see
how it worked out
in the playoffs.
Right. And it's just more the fact of, I think, like, it's just, this year in college football was so weird. Like, we could all, like, there was not a powerhouse to the point of where we have a one-loss team and a two-loss team in the national championship. Mm-hmm. It feels like we haven't seen that in years. Like, we're so used to the Georgias who just dominate the entire year, Michigan, whoever it might be. And that just didn't happen this year. There was no dominant powerhouse team, and we thought it was Oregon, and we all knew Oregon had flaws. Mm. So I think maybe next year we'll get a better idea with the Power Four maybe as the byes and not Boise State or whatever it might be. But yeah, it's interesting, and I'm just happy that honestly we're getting this matchup. Let's do our predictions really quick for the national championship, Ohio State and Notre Dame. Julian, I'll start with you.
You want to do scores too?
I mean, if you want to just rub it in our face.
Ohio State 35, Notre Dame 21.
Notre Dame 27, Ohio State 24.
Yeah, I mean, I gotta say the Irish. I don't know. I don't want to do scores. I'm just riding with the Irish. The only thing I said, if they're gonna lose, I do hope it's just a blowout and they don't lose in a heartbreaking last second field goal or touchdown or whatever it might be, because that might actually be the death of me. So once again, national championship Monday night. If they win, Julian is not gonna hear the end of it next week on Red Zone. But when we come back, we're gonna talk more about the state of Chicago sports. Keep it right here on the Red Zone. WZND back here on the Red Zone. Ben Hootie, Julian Voss, Joey LeMaster bringing you some Chicago sports talk and the state of Chicago sports and where it currently stands. When we last left you, that was actually the week after Matt Eberflus got fired from the Bears. Mm-hmm. So we talked a little bit more about that. We knew a potential coaching job was up in the air. At the time, we were kind of excited because Thomas Brown was taking over, and it was kind of his tryout. Well, guess what? The Bears only won one game after that, but it was against the Packers. Mm-hmm. So that's at least cool. They got to win. I don't care about where they land in the draft or whatever it might be. They got to be the Packers. It was awesome. But other than that, it has been a crazy last couple weeks with this Bears coaching search. As of right now, I think there's 6 openings in the NFL. It started off with 7. Mike Vrabel, a guy that I really, really wanted. But as soon as that Patriots job opened up, we all knew Mike Vrabel was going to the New England Patriots. And now it comes down to a laundry list of candidates that the Bears have interviewed at this point. It's absurd. It's a new one every day. And it's a name that I'm just like, wow, did not expect to see that on the list. But good that you guys are interviewing him, I guess. I saw Arthur Smith, and I was like, all right, let's not go that far.
That was crazy. So, like, before we went on, I was peeking over Julian's computer when he was on LinkedIn. Apparently, he got a message from LinkedIn. So, Julian Voss, like, are you ready for your interview with the Bears?
I mean, I feel like I could get the job better than a lot of these other candidates.
talk.
Oh, man. I mean, there's a lot of names up in the air right now, but I feel like at this point, in the way that the media is talking about it, the Bears is obviously one of those jobs that you want to take. Granted, you have to deal with the GM and management and whatever it might be, but you know what? You got to deal with that anywhere else. You're going to be able to coach for a legendary franchise in the Chicago Bears with just a weapon at quarterback. I mean, Caleb Williams just continued to, for the most part, made strides throughout the entire season. And we know about the prospect that he is as a quarterback. Who wouldn't want to have the potential to coach him? I'd say at this point, I think we're circling 2 names that seem like it's pretty clear and obvious who might be the Bears' next coach. I think it's either between Ben Johnson and Mike McCarthy.
Yeah, it's between the hydrogen bomb and the coughing baby. And unfortunately, since the Chicago Bears, they do not want to spend money, we are going to bring home the coughing baby. Julian, I need to hear your thoughts on this.
Honestly, people hate on McCarthy a whole lot. Okay,
I'm not disagreeing. I'm not necessarily disagreeing with him.
I think 100% I want Ben Johnson too. Caleb had a prank call on him that he seemed like he really wanted him so badly they got mad after it. But he has coached Caleb Williams is his role model, a.k.a. Aaron Rodgers. He's also won 12 games for, like, 3 years in Dallas. So I think this team right now is looking – I think he could be a good spot for this team because he's been there. He's done this. He's been over a lot of these teams a lot of this time. So he wouldn't be a bad guy to have, but Ben Johnson's obviously the better one.
I think that scares me about Mike McCarthy, and we want Ben Johnson, like 100%. We want Ben Johnson. And the thing that scares me the most about Mike McCarthy is the fact that they just seem to have this weird fixation with him. I mean, we knew that there was going to be a point where potentially the Cowboys let him walk or extended his contract, whatever it might be. It eventually got to that point where, you know, the Cowboys were like, all right, we're just going to find a new coach. But the Bears were the only team that requested to interview him while he was in Dallas. And Dallas was like, no. Sure enough, a week later, he becomes available. I kind of agree with all the points that Julian's saying, but, I mean, I need Ben Johnson, man. And the only thing that scares me about Ben Johnson is we talk about Ben Johnson now, like how we talked about Matt Nagy, like when he was like coming up through the Chiefs ranks and everything. But it is really like, you cannot deny like Ben Johnson is like maybe the smartest guy in football, the way that he runs that Lions offense. And I think we just want a guy that like a good offensive coach, like for this quarterback, for this unit, for DJ Moore, for Roma Dunze, like whatever it might be, for Cole Kmet to finally get involved. Like I just want to have a good offense and like, I'm over it.
Yeah, and it's just gonna be really unfortunate because with Mike McCarthy, like, I know he won the big game in the past, but like, it's kind of limited knowing, like, you kind of know what his ceiling is. Like, you're gonna get 10-7 and you're probably gonna get a wild card exit.
I mean, this is my thing with Ben Johnson. I just want a younger coach that could grow with Caleb Williams because right now you have a lot of candidates that are over 55, 60 years old. And you have a quarterback that's 23, 24 years old, and you want him to grow with him. Caleb was on Amon Ra's podcast the other day, and he said he wants to be on with a head coach that he could win for 18, 19 years, something like that. And first of all, him saying that he wants to play that long in Chicago is surprising enough because nobody ever wants to do that. But second of all, if you have a guy that's saying he wants somebody like that, kind of pointing out who he wants as a head coach, why wouldn't you give your number one pick that you invested all this time into and just not give him what he finally wants?
Yeah,
that in O-line.
You want to say how it is? Like, it's just money. Like, I know it's gonna be kind of funny coming from someone who only makes like $15 an hour, but like when it comes to McCaskies, they're kind of poverty compared to other owners.
Yeah.
Like, they don't want to spend money. Like, Ben, I know you saw the clip of George McCaskey at the Blackhawks game in a fake jersey.
Yeah.
We have an NFL owner that can't even buy a $100 jersey and is getting some random one off Temu that got shipped like 2 days before. And that's just the state of the Bears. They have got, like, every year or heading the offseason, it's like, oh, the Bears, they're like top 10 in cap space. They can make some moves. And then we sign like Nate Davis for like $5 million a year. Like, oh, why aren't we good? The McCaskies, they're just not as good as compared to other owners, and that's why we're going to settle with mid instead of greatness.
Yeah, I went to the Bears-Seahawks game over break, my first time at Soldier Field.
Oh my god, I was supposed to go to it.
My first time at Soldier Field, and I can tell you right now, that was probably the most depressing game you could ever watch in your life or any sport.
I was supposed to go to it, and I had work that night, so I was like, I don't really feel like getting my shift covered to go to a Bears game. And boy, was I so happy. I mean, it was miserable. It was raining too. Like, it was just did not seem fun at all. I want to ask you guys this. Do you have a problem with them not firing Ryan Poles?
If that's really what decides Ben Johnson, I'm not going to have an issue. Cause like, yeah, I know like Poles like pulled off the trade, but you can also look at all the negatives. Like, there's not really, you can't say Poles has done enough. Like, oh yeah, he 100% is safe with the job. Like, if you think that, I think it's a little ridiculous. I don't think he's also deserving to be fired as well. But if it comes down to Ben Johnson, like, who's going to change your organization? Is it going to be the head coach that can make something out of nothing, or is it just going to be the GM? And I think I would trust Ben Johnson more.
Yeah, this is my thing with him. If you're thinking that this is going to be the last year before you fire him, you have to fire him now.
That's what I'm saying.
Because it can't be the same on cycle that you're going. You're getting rid of your head coach, then you get rid of the GM, then all over again, it's the same thing 5 years from now. I think if you really are thinking that in your head, get rid of him now. I don't think that he's done enough in general, except for that one trade, which is incredibly lucky.
Yeah.
That's incredibly lucky. Like, yeah. That's a once in a million.
And if anything, I wouldn't even say the Panthers are even regretting it that much. Bryce Young kind of turned into a stud at the end of the year there. I don't know. It just scares me because it's like rinse and repeat. I feel like I've said that when we talk about the Bears so many times on this show, and that's just what it will always feel like when you're talking about this franchise. It's just always rinse and repeat. They're gonna fire the coach, fire the GM. Sometimes they do it together, sometimes they don't, and then the quarterback ends up turning into a bust, leaves, same cycle all over again. And I'm hoping this is different. And I think if you bring in Ben Johnson, it changes everything. It really does.
Yeah, I think it just seems like it's so obvious, and that teams around the league also think that it's the most obvious choice, but when it really comes down to the Chicago Bears as a whole, it just does not make sense for Ben Johnson himself, because what good have the Chicago Bears done, like, in the last however so many years? Why not go get that big paycheck out in Las Vegas with Tom Brady or something like that? And I'm not saying that I don't want Ben Johnson, but if I'm also thinking in his head right now, he's obviously looking at all the bad that we've done over the past however so many years, and why also put yourself into that same organization, unless you really, really feel like you could change it with another GM.
Feel like we're going to continue. I feel like there's a chance that by next week we could have an answer. Mm-hmm. Who really knows? I hope there's an answer soon. It's coming soon because we're halfway through January, so we're getting close, and I guarantee you that they will have a coach by the end of January. So we'll continue to keep you updated with that and our thoughts and feelings. There's a couple other things that have happened in Chicago sports since we last talked. I know Joey wants to mention something, but before we get to that, really quickly, it's been a weird off season for them, but I think if you would have talked to us the week after it happened, we would have been over the moon. Kyle Tucker is a Chicago Cub, and they have arguably a top 20 player in baseball, probably for the first time since Chris Bryant's prime, and boy, does it feel good.
I mean, it's so exciting to finally see somebody that's going to bring some excitement to the team. And did you see the other day that Cam Smith was working out with him?
That's
crazy. The guy to trade him for?
Like, I know.
That's just wild to me, but I think he's going to bring a lot of what the Cubs need, which is power hitting and good defense in right field, but they still have other holes they need to fix, and they just haven't done anything yet, and Jed Hoyer just does not want to open up the paycheck.
And the big thing was, too, once they traded for Kyle Tucker, someone had to go, and it ended up being Cody Bellinger, and that opened up a lot of cap space because the Yankees, you know, the way that the trade worked out, the Yankees took on majority of the money. So you just freed up about $25 million. Go do something with that. Like, go spend it somewhere. And they just haven't yet. And that's part, kind of the frustrating part. But I think, you know, in all totality right now, the NL Central is kind of down. It feels like they're the favorite. I know they're the betting favorite right now. And I think Kyle Tucker just changes this lineup in all reality. I know you're losing a big bat in Cody Bellinger, but let's be honest, was a little replaceable. Kyle Tucker is someone you can't replace. I know everyone's talking, oh, well, why does it matter if they don't sign him to extension? Honestly, I'm just happy that Jed Hoyer saw a star player on the market, and I know it was through trade and not free agency, and he was just like, you know what, I'm willing to trade prospect capital, trade players on the field right now, and go get a true star in Major League Baseball.
Yeah, one more quick thing on that. I think in Jed Hoyer's mind, he's not thinking about the future right now. His job's on the line,
100%,
too.
100%,
yeah. So he's making the moves right now that are going to save his job this next coming season instead of just thinking about the extension, because they've never been the team to do that, and they're not going to do that in his year that he might get fired.
And he's going to be a free agent, so it's essentially a one-year tryout, and he gets to see the city for a year. So hopefully it works out, and they sign him to an extension because he is one of the best talents at baseball. Joey, you brought something. This is major, major news in terms of the sport of soccer, and more specifically the MLS. Neymar is currently in talks to come to the United States, correct, and play for MLS teams. And I know there's two other teams, but I think the big headline was yesterday the potential of the Chicago Fire signing Neymar.
Yeah, who would ever thought MLS would have been brought up on the Red Zone? But ladies and gentlemen, we are here because if Neymar signs to Chicago, he is without a doubt the biggest free agent to ever happen. Fabrizio Romano, who is the reporter of soccer, has said that move is on the way, or not move is on the way, that there's a lot of interest. And according to ESPN Brazil, the Chicago Fire owner and their head coach, Greg Berhalter, is currently in Saudi Arabia to try to negotiate with his agent. So it seems like this move is gaining more traction. And if Chicago, for the first time, and not just my life, I want to say ever, brings in a big-time free agent to the club, imagine how much money that's going to bring to the city, and imagine how exciting that would be.
Yeah, I don't really know a whole lot about soccer, but Neymar is one of the names I do know. And if I really just, like, thought about a team in Chicago finally bringing in a big free agent, it would be the last team I think would be this Fire.
Yeah.
You'd think it would be, like,
the Bulls.
The Bulls, the teams that don't have a salary cap, the Sox, the Cubs, but no, it's the Fire, and that just shows how much bad the other organizations are doing right now.
Yeah, and in case you guys don't know, Brazil, like, they produce all these soccer legends. Neymar has the most goals in Brazil history, so he is that guy. That would be the biggest name ever, and it's just, I never thought I'd say this, if they sign him, I will 100% be attending a Chicago Fire game, because who knows the next time we'll see a big name like that in our city.
If you want updates on Neymar's potential free agency, go follow Joey LeMaster on Twitter,
TM LeMaster.
Joseph TM LeMaster?
No, just TM LeMaster.
Beautiful. Go follow him. When we come back in the Red Zone, we're going to be talking NFL playoffs. WZND back here on the Red Zone talking NFL divisional round of the playoffs. While the Bears aren't here anymore, neither are the Packers and Vikings, so that's a win for all of us at the end of the day. Just embarrassed in the playoffs. They only got to play one more game than us. Who cares? And we have better records than them in 2025, too.
They're
both 0-2. We're 1-0.
Media doesn't want to tell you that.
Vibes are high in Chicago. No, let's talk about the teams that actually matter right now. The eight teams left in the NFL playoffs, and I think we're setting up for some really, really good games this weekend. On Saturday, I think people are a little more down than what might happen on Sunday, but I still think there's chance for some craziness to happen. And we can start on Saturday with the Houston Texans against the Kansas City Chiefs. I just want to say this before we start talking. Texans, I was very shocked that they had the home game, the divisional, whatever. They just looked not that good all year, and it kind of helps that they just didn't have a good division, and they're just clear and away the best team in their division. I was shocked at what they did to the Chargers last Saturday.
Yeah, me as well, and CJ Stroud wasn't even necessarily that impressive as well. It's just the defense showed out, and they proved why Justin Herbert might be the greatest hypothetical quarterback ever, because Herbert just was not able to perform when the lights were the brightest. But that was a big win for the Texans. Joe Mixon continued to look great, but man, we're on the Texans' maybe 19th game of the season now or something around those lines. I'm still like, oh, when's the CJ Stroud breakout game happening this year?
Yeah.
We still have yet to get it after what was an incredible rookie campaign.
Yeah, I was shocked the Chargers lost that game. I thought they were going to even give the Chiefs more of a run for their money, too.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. It seems like the Texans right now, they're kind of just like how the Chiefs went throughout the season. It's just like just getting by and just getting through the games. But now they're facing the team that's just getting by. So they got killed by them also on Christmas. So I don't really know how this team's going to look.
No, it was the weekend before that. It was close.
Yeah.
The Texans got killed by the Ravens on Christmas.
Yeah, that's what
yes.
it was.
But I think it was the weekend before, so might have been right after Thanksgiving. And it was like a Saturday game. The Texans went to Arrowhead, and it was close. It was the Tank Dell injury game, mm-hmm. that horrific injury that he ended up. So, like, I don't know. Like, it's so weird with the Texans. They're not really that good of a team. The defense looked really good against the Chargers. I don't know. But it's the Chiefs at the end of the day. Like, it's Pat Mahomes. But it's also worth mentioning, Pat Mahomes hasn't played a game since December 25th.
Ooh.
Mm.
That's huge.
Yeah. Interesting.
Don't worry. The voodoo magic going on.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, they'll be fine.
Just wait for the rough in the passer call.
As soon as they show Taylor Swift up in that box, Texans, they're done. They're done.
Could not agree more. This should be a convincing win for the Chiefs. But got to be happy for the Texans to make it to this point in the season, because it didn't look like you would even make it to the playoffs at one point, let alone get out of the wild card.
And I think we could pivot to the Chiefs really quick. Just what a weird season. Like, we said it at the beginning of the season. I'm not even going to say it again because I feel like I've said it so much at this point, but they literally are our Patriots at this point. And, like, they did not dominate any team this year. Like, there was not a pure dominating win. I don't think once. I don't think they blew a team out once this year. It was at least 2-score games every time. For the most part, 1-score games. They won them all. They just kept on winning. They would probably be 16-1 right now if they ended up playing their starters against Denver. And I don't know. It's just one of the weirdest teams I've ever seen, but I still can't deny the fact that they can win a championship this year, because that's just what they do.
Yeah, 100%. And I was talking to my roommates about this because it made me laugh, because I felt like I was saying the same thing last year. It's like, oh, dude, the Ravens and the Bills, they're looking good. They might give the Chiefs a fight this year. And it's like, until the Chiefs lose the game, I'm just not going to change my view on it. The Chiefs will always be a championship contender. And just when they make it to the big game again, I just am not going to be surprised at all.
This is the big year, trust. Just wait.
I think that's what they said word for word. And I started giggling. Like, it's just not going to happen.
So let's move on to the next game between two teams that have just been dying for playoff success. And, you know, one of these teams had a bye, went to the NFC Championship last year, and, you know, nearly snuck out a win against the San Francisco 49ers. And then, meanwhile, the Commanders last week, and what I would say was really the only good game of Wild Card Weekend, just, you know, continuing their luck and their streak of whatever they, however they win, the Commanders moving on to face the Lions, I would say Team of Destiny, Detroit Lions.
Yeah, I got to defend my boy Jaden Daniels real quick. And that's probably biased because him and Terry McLaurin won me the Fantasy Football Championship. But we talk about the Chiefs and they find ways to win games. And we talk about the Commanders and we say it's luck. These boys are talented. That offense is so fun to watch. And Jaden Daniels has had one of the most enjoyable rookie campaigns that we've had in a while. Maybe since last year with CJ Stroud, but ignore what I'm talking about. It's just, this is going to be an exciting game, I hope. I know a lot of people are saying, like, the Lions are just going to deliver the boom, drop a hammer on them, but the Commanders are a fun team to watch. I'm really hoping for a shootout here.
Yeah, people call me crazy, but there has to be one upset in this next round of games, and I feel like this might be the one. I'm not saying that I think the Lions are not 100% going to win it, but 75-25% chance, because I could just see them doing some Lions thing and having a dumb play and just completely blowing the game off in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, I just heard Steve Cease knock on the door, Julian.
Yeah,
time
I know.
Might be ticking.
I'm talking about U of I and the Lions losing this bad week.
You're talking about a dumb play, but I don't think it's going to be a dumb play. Like, when you talk about the Lions' biggest weakness, and I don't want to discredit him too hard because Dan Campbell is a good coach, but Dan Campbell loves to gamble.
It's more than
23 on their own 30. It's like, I just got a gut feeling we should go for this. And
that's what hurt them last year.
Yeah, the Lions should have been the big game last year, but Dan Campbell's like, you know what? We're going to take some risks just for the love of the game. It's just, you can't always say the Lions are like an easy favorite just because, you know, Dan Campbell, he just wants to have fun. He's here for an exciting football game. So that's why I'm not going to completely rule out the Commanders in this one.
And I'd love to see how he, you know, treats those kind of gambles in the once he gets to the playoffs. I don't think he's going to change the way he coaches.
No.
But it can definitely hurt them, 100%.
We've seen it.
And it'll be really interesting across these playoffs. I still think Team of Destiny, like, I didn't predict them to win the big game early on in the season, but it's just the way the season's gone, how they've fought through injuries. I mean, my lord, they are the most injured team in the NFL easily. They've lost so many stars. I know David Montgomery's probably coming back, but just it's been incredible what they've been able to do this year. And I will give props to the Commanders as well, because they've been a lot of fun to watch, and it's been good to see kind of the rejuvenation of that franchise. Wish that could happen in Chicago. All right, next up on Sunday, I would say, never mind, the game of the week is obviously the later game, but I still think this is a great game. The Rams and the Eagles. The Rams did something to the Vikings I don't think any of us expected. We knew it was going to be a good game between two teams. The Rams had beat them earlier in the season, but that Rams defense, oh my goodness, they looked phenomenal. Just Sam Darnold could not get off anything, and I think, you know, vibes are really high. I should not say that, but the Rams, the vibes for the Rams are super high right now. Meanwhile, the Eagles, they've just continued to find ways to win, and that's just riding off their workhorse and Saquon Barkley.
Yeah, I really don't want to sidetrack off this game, so I'm going to try not to do it for too long, but have you ever seen someone lose $60 million in the span of 11 days like Sam Darnold has?
Do we really think so?
No way Sam Darnold's getting a bag after those last two games.
Some team might get desperate. The quarterback class
is not that good.
The QB class this year is not
Steelers,
that good.
Giants, like I just Jets, don't see
Raiders.
I doubt he goes back to the Jets, but Raiders.
Yeah, he doesn't want to see ghosts again, but yeah, it's just Sam Darnold had a rough end to what was like almost a miracle season for him. Well, this game, I'm excited for. Eagles didn't look too promising, and I'm such a Nick Sirianni denier, where I think the Rams have a very good shot in this game. It's just, you just cannot count on a team that's coached by Sean McVay. That's just an incredible coach, one of the best in the league, and he always just finds ways to win these games. And the Rams' offense is fun to watch. The defense looked incredible. I'm excited for this one. I think it's going to be a close one.
Yeah, I honestly did see the Vikings just losing. Not by that much, but I did see them losing for a good amount, because I thought they were pretenders most of the year. But I've had the Eagles in my big game since the beginning of the season. I think it's more so going to be a Jalen Hurts has to win this game for them versus Saquon Barkley, because that D-line on the Rams is phenomenal.
Yeah.
But most of their corners are not that great. So A.J. Brown and Devontae Smith both need to have huge games this weekend.
Yeah, but that might be the problem, needing Jalen Hurts to win the game rather than Barkley. If I'm Nick Sirianni, Hurts, I think you need like, want Barkley
week
to win the game.
Yeah.
I know Jalen Hurts is just fighting literal mental issues. Like, the concussions have been killing that guy, but it's just, I would not be confident if the method heading the game is, oh, we need Jalen Hurts to win this one.
I disagree with that. I know he's been struggling a little bit, but I think it's also been the concussions and a lot of the injuries he's had throughout the year.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that Jalen Hurts can win a big game. He obviously has made the Super Bowl once through a horrible Hail Mary pass at the end of the game. But
never forget.
I think the Eagles will win this one, but I really just hope that my predictions stayed right.
I've been on the Eagles train all year. I think they're a lot better than people gave them credit for early on. I don't know. There's something about this Rams team and Sean McVay and Matt Stafford in January. Like, they gave me really good vibes on Monday night, and I was like, you know what? This team might just win it all again. Like, who knows?
I know, we can talk about Staffs, but at the end of the day, it just comes down to vibes.
Yeah.
I'm not going to lie. I want to see Stafford in Detroit in the NFC Championship.
That'd
so
be awesome.
Bad. That would be the perfect
be
script.
Sick.
And he gets his revenge on last year's playoff game,
oh
too,
God,
potentially.
I'll get emotional.
Oh, my God. That'd be awesome. All right. Before we wrap up here, easily the game of the week, the battle between the MVPs in Buffalo, Baltimore, and Buffalo, the Bills and the Ravens. I mean, you could not script a better second-round matchup than this between two of the powerhouses of the AFC over the last several years, and two guys that I think at this point you could say is a coin flip for the MVP award.
I mean, how can you not be romantic about this sport?
Yeah.
This is such an exciting contest, and I have a lot of faith in the Bills here. It's just they won a lot of those big games during the regular season, which I think kind of proved like, oh, yeah, we're ready now. Like, I know we've had some unfortunate goes in the postseason where we lost super close games, but they won those close games those years. They won the competitive marquee matchup. So I'm excited to see what Josh Allen and the Buffalo Bills are going to do on Sunday night.
Yeah, I think we're going to have two birds in the big game. So I got the Ravens winning this one. I don't know.
Ooh.
I have a really good feeling about them. Throughout the whole year, I've had a good feeling about them. The Bills' D-line is pretty bad, and I think Derrick Henry is just about to have a monster game for them.
Yeah. I don't know. It's like, it's two teams that just need to catch a break. Like, at this point, ever since Lamar's been the quarterback of the Ravens, he just can't win big games. He can't. It's been clear as day. We saw last year how winnable that game was in Baltimore, and he just didn't really show up at all. And that was a team that I would say is much better than they are right now. Meanwhile, Buffalo, it's just been a rough go of things in the postseason for them, that it's like almost feels hard to make a prediction. And I'm going to go with Buffalo just because I think that home field advantage will play a key factor. But, you know, you can't count out Baltimore and just the way that they win football games. And it was early on. The Ravens The Ravens beat the Bills pretty handily early on in the season, right? But that one was in Baltimore. I don't know. This is an interesting matchup, and I think it's going to be cinema. I think it's going to be cinema. I think it's, you know,
absolute
every
cinema,
time that every time there's a playoff game in Buffalo, I feel like it always comes down to like the end of the game, whatever it might be. I mean, we've seen it even in the big game itself all those years ago when they're missing field goals at their home stadium in the big game. So I don't know. This is a crazy game. I'm personally rooting for the Bills. I want Josh Allen to win one.
I do as well. I'm just rooting for a good game. I support both these teams. They play such a fun style of football, and I just hope either of them can beat the Chiefs. That's really my goal. I'm not saying they're going to, but that's just what I'm hoping for.
I think that's what America's hoping for.
Yeah.
Honestly, that's my only hope right now.
Chiefs voodoo magic needs to end this year. We'll continue giving you constant coverage of the NFL playoffs as we continue to go through them. Once again, it was a pleasure to be back with you. We host Red Zone every Thursday from 6 to 7. For Ben Hootie, Julian Voss, and Joey LeMaster, thank you so much for joining this edition of the Red Zone.